Okay. I'm gonna put a little timer here because I'm long-winded. Looks like it's time for me to qualify for what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Again, my name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic.
Joe.
So my sobriety date is December 6, 2015, and thank you, Victor, for inviting me out, and thank you all for also inviting me to be here today. Like many of us, that was not my situation when I first came into these rooms. Just to quickly let you know, I was homeless. I was living with my brother, and I was being kicked out of the house I was living with. I was beaten and left in a coma in an open field in Riverside to die by these people I was drinking with. And my parents just, my family, had an intervention, so I had nowhere to go. So I understand what they say. When I walked in, it really was the last house on the block for me. I had no other options. And also that gift of desperation, you know. I did not believe that was going to be my situation when I started drinking. You know, I was 16, and like many of us, it was fun. You know, house parties, you know, keggers, beer bongs, you know, Mickey's. I loved them because they were big. They taste like crap, but it got me there, and it got me there fast, you know. And as a kid, I had a lot of these built-up fears and anxieties that I didn't understand back then, you know, and I just was uncomfortable under my skin. And when I drank, it just was like, I love the effect, like it talks about, you know, in the book. You know, it made me feel fun. Everything was fun, and for that time, I could have fun, and I enjoyed it. As a result, I wanted more of it, and I wanted it as often as I could get, you know? So it quickly became where it wasn't just a weekend thing, where I was now at work, drinking at work, and, you know, carrying it into my life. It was slowly becoming like a priority. Jobs. I had a lot of jobs. Good jobs, paying jobs, where my parents, actually my family, pulled a lot of strings, union jobs, high-paying jobs. And as I was becoming heavier in my disease, like I said, it was just more of a priority, the alcohol, that nothing mattered, you know. These looked as obstacles for me, you know. And I remember one of my jobs, or I was just drinking, and the person I was living with was walking out. I was like, are you going to work? I was like, no, not today. And that was my MO. You know, I've lost all of those jobs by mail. So many of them. Because I never even just showed up, you know, by certified mail. And, you know, it was apparent to my friends and family. And the biggest thing that happened for me was in 2012. I went out and I met these people in Riverside that I could drink. That drank the way that I drink, you know. It was everything, you know, and they didn't care. And I was drinking with them. Per usual, I was in a blackout. I don't know what happened, but they found me in an open field, beaten, in a coma, left to die. You know, and through that process, I learned to walk and talk again throughout a year. You know, luckily, the grace of God, I didn't die. And I had no solution. You know, I had, you know, I was still based on self through that process. I was just dry for that year. And sure enough, once I got my license back after that year, I went back out. And I went back out to that same exact people, the same people, you know, who had beaten me up before, you know. Why is that important? Because it really, looking back now, it gave me the understanding that, you know, I'm powerless, you know, through that process. I remember driving over there, looking in the rearview mirror, saying, what are you doing, Joe? Like, stop. Like, they're going to kill you again, maybe this time, you know? And I didn't understand. And I also had no control to stop, as much as I wanted to or thought I wanted to. Understandably, when I went back out, I was on the spree for, you know, a couple of days, weeks. And when I came back, my family had that intervention, which was, now I can see, was a good thing, you know, a blessing. But they told me, basically, you can do whatever you're doing, we just don't want to be involved anymore, you know? And like I said, my brother I was living with at the time, it's like, you know, you can't live here. You know, when the weekend comes, pack up your stuff. And so I just walked into the program of AA. And I'd like to give you some idea that I did something unique or different, but I didn't, you know. I walked in, and this time I took a lot of action. I did what was suggested. You know, I got a sponsor. You know, he was active. He knew the big book. And he was committed. So, you know, just like it was mentioned, you know, one of my first things that I did was a chili cook-off, you know. And I was new, you know, but he was like, come on, you know, and put me into work. And it was good for me because it was what I needed at that time because my mind was crazy, you know. And a lot of action and just continual action. You know, we got into through the books, you know, being of service at conventions. I've been on committees for that. I've sponsored people. It's just putting myself in the middle of the pack, like they say, you know. And for that, I have a good life today. What's it like today, you know? I actually live with somebody who's in program. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with her on this, but she's like, she jokes with me. She's like, you have a charmed life. But I don't. You know, I mean, I have a good life. I'm very blessed. You know, maybe it's because I'm still single, right? But yeah, you know, my family, the ones that my brother that kicked me out, you know, I was able to rebuild connections with him. And I ended up 2 years ago buying a house with him. You know, and when he asked me, I was like, are you sure? Like a house, we're not just buying clothes or something. And he was like, no, you know, I mean, and that's what my life is today. I'm trusted, you know, I'm able to be a part of the world where before I just looked at myself as the world was something for me to overcome, you know, and that I was unusual or different or unique, you know, I'm not. I'm able to go ahead and be a part of it and enjoy it, you know, for all that it has to offer, good and bad. It's not to say that my life is perfect. I just, most recently, a friend of mine, a really good friend of mine that I've known in the program since I first came in, she didn't make it, you know, and she called me that day, every day. And that day that she passed, you know, and I remember when she called me, she's like, Joey, you know, I'm having a hard time. And I was like, it's okay. I'm going to see you at the Monday night. You know, I just got off work. I'm putting on my clothes. I'll be right there with you. You know, I love you. You know, she wait for me in the parking lot. And by the time I got there 2 hours later, you know, she didn't make it, you know. And it's a blessing, though, to go ahead and still be able to, as a result of that, be with her family and support them and love them. But also, too, a good reminder to me that, you know, that I can go at any time. And it's just a one-day-at-a-time program, and that's all any of us do have, you know. And as much as she was such a good soul, you know, and such a kind person, so beautiful, I mean, she was everybody, yeah. You know, it takes work, and it takes action, you know, and it takes commitment. You know, and God bless Victor. You know, when he asked me to go ahead and leave, you know, I'm still an alcoholic. I was like, okay, what do I wear? What's it going to be? What's the time? What's this? What's that? And he was like, I don't know. I was like, all right. You know, and it's a good thing I wear a suit, right? Because that's what I know. But I just suit up and show up, you know, and that's what I've been taught. I'm glad that, you know, when I got my sponsor, you know, he had people who showed him in the lineage that he had, just the basics of keeping it simple, you know, and that's what I continue to fall back on today, you know, with the whole pandemic and changes and stuff going on in the world, you know, I'm able to go ahead and process and walk through certain things like my friend not making it and hard and difficult situations. Where before I used to drink, and that's what the whole program is about for me today. You know, it's not about this me being perfect and me being everything right or wrong or black and white. It's about, you know, being flexible, adjusting, and putting forth, you know, the best that I can, and I get one more day, you know, and And that's why today I have a happy life. And I am so grateful for all of you, to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and AA today. So thank you.
All right.
Cool. Made it right on the money, right? When you give things some timer. Okay, we are self-supporting through our own contributions. Do we have somebody that's going to come up and do the seventh tradition?
Taking care of, taking care of.
Oh, it's okay. Oh, okay. Well, then I owe you for that. All right. Well, then tonight our speaker is Victor
Ortega.
I know. I was like, I hear you say Ortega all the time, just like your brother.
This one hooked
you. Oh. Yay.
Good job.
Okay. Right? Lovely too. Thank you.
Okay, so there's your part to do it.
Grab my timer.
Hi, everybody. Good evening, everyone. My name is Victor Ortega, and I am an alcoholic.
Victor!
And I'd like to thank Les for inviting me to be here. Why does it look like less people are here now that the food's gone? I haven't turned around in a while. It seems a little smaller. My name is Victor Ortega. I'm an alcoholic. Like I said, thank you, Les. Thank you, Joe, for agreeing to meet me out here and do this little event, this Friday night fun with me. Love Joe. He does have a charmed life. Don't let his woe is me attitude fool you. This guy is loved and loved in our home groups of Chino, in Chino, and for valid reasons. For valid reasons. This program is amazing. The things that it does for us. I'm already speaking to the choir, except for you. You may not know yet how awesome this program is, how I'll use the word miraculous. Life can change. And thank God for that, because life was pretty ugly for me, and I think you guys can relate to that. I have a sponsor, Roy A. He has 23 years. My sobriety date is November 29th, 2008. I'm currently rocking 13 years of sobriety. Days and nights, weekends, leap year, all that. And without a doubt, it has been the best 13 years of my life. I got sober at 35. And prior to getting sober, I had a ton of adventures. I mean, before it got ugly, it was rad. I had a lot of great times. I'll tell you a little bit about it, but man, when it started getting ugly, it did not ease up. And, well, let me give you a more detailed version of that. So I'm the youngest of four. Growing up in my household, it was a bit of a scary place. Pops was a heavy drinker. Back then, he was a different man. Roof is right. He was rough. Thank you. He was a rough dad. And I was the youngest of four, and so I saw a lot of fighting. I saw a lot of violence. I saw a lot of scary moments. There were a few times, being a young boy, I threw clothes and PJs and pillow cases getting ready to run away. I just got to get out of here. There were a few times I needed to leave that place just because it was so scary to me. There were so many times fighting and yelling and arguing. It became normal to me. And my home was, the lessons I learned in home were lessons I learned about the world for me. And I think that's pretty characteristic of humans. For example, one lesson that I learned was at any moment, life can get really scary. Things can get upside down, and the peaceful moments I'm experiencing, I'm enjoying, could be taken, and it could flip, it could switch. You know, I learned to be on guard. Like, are they yelling again? Is that my brothers? Is that crashing? Am I hearing things really escalating? Am I hearing things get crazy? That became a norm in our household. And so me witnessing it, I began to expect it. I began to anticipate it, like be on guard for it. And being on guard for scary and violence and frightening, lo and behold, it leaves somebody with a lot of anxiety. Like, it's not very, I'm on guard, I'm tense, I'm ready for it, the shoe to drop. And I had no idea I was developing such patterns of anxiety or fear. I loved how our literature talks to us about how fear-driven I am. I remember reading about this in Lessons of how fear-driven I am, humans, alcoholics. And that really opened my eye. I had no idea how frequently my brain told me or gave me fearful messages. Watch out for this. You're not going to like this. From radical extreme fear to like little small fear, my brain gives me messages of fear. And for so long, I'm not going to like this. Oh, I got to speak at a park. I'm not going to do a good job. Oh, the hamburgers. The dog's going to bite me. You know, whatever it might be. Les isn't going to approve. Ooh. How about that fear?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. The job I do, I'm going to disappoint Les. Fear always coming at me, and it has my whole life. And it wasn't until AA that I learned that I could challenge some of these beliefs, some of my thoughts, some of my feelings, that feelings aren't fact. It's important that I validate them, because I spend a lot of time running from my feelings and acting as if they're not real. So finding that balance between running from them, being immersed in them, to just as in a healthy of a manner as I can, accept them, honor them, but challenge them. Feel free to challenge them. I think that comes with lessons of humility, that everything my brain tells me isn't accurate. I have enough evidence that shows me a lot of stuff my brain tells me isn't accurate at all. So, you know, look at that evidence. Dare to look at that evidence, Victor. And when I dare to look at that evidence, it's amazing how much freedom I'm able to find. You know, the courage, the willingness to challenge some of my thoughts is what provides me freedom and liberation from my thoughts. The trap, the biggest obstacle I have to deal with are the things that happen between my ears, my perceptions, my feelings, my concerns, my fears. And it's always just going to be perspective for me. And I never was really good at changing perspective, not until coming to AA. And so for a long time, I lived with this anxiety, with negative self-talk. Junior high in the 70s was weird. I remember that's when I wanted girls to start liking me, and it didn't really feel like any of the girls were. Like, I wanted them to like me, but they weren't having the same feelings. They had them for other boys, it felt like to me. And I'm trying to do things, but the fashion was weird in the mid-80s. I spent a lot of time with a blow dryer trying to get this perfect hair, this perfect... I'm not pointing at you because you went through it, but you've heard the story before. Trying to get this perfect pompadour. I thought it was that would be the ticket to attracting girls. It sounds very Animal Kingdom. Very peacocky, if I could do with feathers. And it never worked out. So this less than feeling stuck with me. I carried it in high school. In high school, I met, some other losers. We came together. We banded together, a bunch of unpopular kids, and we would hang out together. And similar to Joe's story, it started with me really like freshman year, junior high to the high school, house parties. Keggers, hanging out at the park. You know, we had one friend who had a bucket. You know, one friend who had a car. It was just a bucket, and we'd pile into that, and we'd go to house parties. And I remember one of my first experiences: the red plastic cup, going to the keg, pumping that thing. You know, drinking. I remember this component of that night: Southern Comfort, some SoCo going around. That god awful, horrible taste of Southern Comfort. It is a disgusting liquid that is so wonderful at the time. It's that taste, and just like, it does the job. It does the job. I like chemicals. When you mentioned chemicals, I was like, oh, what kind of chemicals are in these baskets that we're raffling off? Southern Comfort's a heck of a chemical. And so I was drinking that. I'm mixing. I'm young. I'm a teenager. I got a weird hairstyle pompadour. I'm trying to be cool. I want to feel a part of. I want to feel connected. I want that connection. I'm smoking Lucky Strike non-filter cigarettes, because that'll make me cool. And the magic of alcohol started to do what it does. I started to feel like the girls liked me. I started to feel like the cool guys were accepting of me, and they were laughing at my jokes. And I felt a part of, and of course I went too far and I drank too much. And next thing I know, I'm blacking out, I'm acting a fool. I'm passing out, and my friends, they left me in some backyard furniture. That house party was somebody we knew, and they let Vic sleep it off here. And I remember waking up And the next morning, really, really cold, vomit on my shirt, freezing, splitting headache, and trying to get back inside the house. Hey guys, let me in. And one of the first thoughts I had was, that was awesome. When do I get to do this again? I wasn't focused on how foolish I might have been behaving, on the vomit, on the headache. I think what stood out to me was that anxiety and fear that usually takes place in my head, it was gone. I had experienced a moment of reprieve from that, and I liked that. I liked feeling a part of, I liked not feeling less than, I liked not being afraid. I liked feeling that connection that I had with other people. And so suddenly my life now has purpose. And, you know, by the time I was, so me and the boys were going to house parties. If there wasn't a house party, we'd come to a park and we'd find a dark place and bongs and 40 ounces. Boys in the Hood was popular around that era. And we'd have our 40 ounces and St. Ides and Mickey's and King Cobra, you know, just anything that we could afford. Quantity over quality was our teenager's motto. And we'd get together and we'd pour a little of the 40 out for the dead homies, you know, because that's what we didn't have any dead homies. But in the movies said that that's what you should do. And so we did that, but not too much because I needed it. And we kind of like grew up challenging each other, pushing each other, who could drink the most. And at that time, I learned that I like to not be sober. I like very much to be as loaded as possible. And so like, I'm drinking my alcohol, I'm smoking my alcohol, I'm snorting my alcohol, I'm popping my alcohol. We're experimenting with a lot of substances, a lot of different things. We were listening to a lot of Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and The Doors at that time. And Depeche Mode and NWA, and whatever. We were just trying to be cool. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I had an everyday habit of I'm gonna get loaded. I'm gonna at least catch a buzz every day. Every day, I'm an 18-year-old with this. Somehow, whether it's a couple beers from my dad's refrigerator, something. And I started a community college. I went to Mount San Antonio College here in Walnut. Beautiful, beautiful school. I love it so much. I went there for most of the 90s. It's a two-year school. It's a two-year school. I was there, started in 1991. I dropped out in 95 to join a reggae band. Reggae wasn't very big in the 90s. I'm going to tell you this. It was a heck of a party scene. Great party scene. And I remember the day I told my parents, my family, hey, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm going to go move into the band house. And they're like, Vic, you don't play an instrument or sing. What are you talking about? So I'm joining the band, guys. Don't worry about me. If you had some percussion instruments, you could join. I played maracas on stage in Hollywood. I played little rhythm sticks. I was on stage. Click, 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 click. I played a triangle one time, and that's a true story. My joke is I was working all sides of the triangle well before coming to AA. That's just a nerdy AA joke. I ended up moving back home, and it dawned on me I wasn't going to be able to pull off being a Partridge Family kid. I had to move back home, and that happened many times in my life. And I went back to that junior college school, Mount San Antonio, great place. I have so many units from going there for so long. And I graduated. My friend and I, we finally walked in 1998, 99, and we were so loaded, so loaded. When I graduated high school, we were blitzkrieged. You know, like whereas like a lot of kids will go to Disneyland here in SoCal when they graduate high school, my friends and I, we went to TJ just because that was appropriate for us. That's our happiest place on earth.
18 and over.
18 and over. You know, I lived a long time without experiencing any major, noticeable, unavoidable consequences. There were consequences going on, but I was able to avoid them. Going on in my life, I was able to paint red flags white. That's not a red flag. That's not a warning flag. And I had enablers. I had friends who helped protect me from experiencing the full consequences of my drinking and my choices. And another thing is I always spent time hanging around people who were drinking and partying the way I was. So it normalized my behavior. I wasn't the odd duck. I wasn't anything, ooh, Victor. In a lot of circles, I would be, but with around the people I'm hanging out with, just normal. It normalized my behavior. I look back at my life and I look at what used to be normal, and it's so foreign now. It's so crazy and distant and unmanageable and insane, truly. When I look back at it now, my life today is so much different. But at that time, it just seemed normal, and it just seemed like the way I was going to live for the rest of my life. This is never going to change. I'm always going to need to have gum on me and clear eyes, because it gets the red out. It gets the red out, and gum for lots of different reasons. But when consequences started happening, they didn't ease up. I remember one time, for example, this was a normal day in my life. I was working with one of my boys from high school. He had a job with his uncle, an environmental company. And so we're driving vehicles, and I would wake up in the morning, and I'm a wake and bake guy. I would do a couple of shots, brush my teeth, drive to work, and I'm driving company vehicles. I also drove a 50,000-pound big rig. I had to have a Class B driver's license, and I would drive loaded all the time. And I look back at how selfish and self-centered that was. You know, because if I would have gotten to a fender bender, or even worse, like a really serious accident, I would have been fine. I'm 20 feet up in the air. I'm in a steel tank. But anyone I would have hit would have pancaked, and it would have been the end of them easily. But I would justify that. I became very skilled at justifying, minimizing, and rationalizing my behavior so that I could ultimately get what I want. Me and my wants is all that mattered. Satisfying my wants. King baby. I'm not able to think about consequences, and I'm not able to think about others. Just me, self-centered at my core. I was feeding that for so long. I was engaged for a while to a gal. We moved in together. And all that really did during that time was, I believe, really harness and increase my ability to live with secrets. You know, she couldn't know all the other party favors I was into. And she couldn't know how frequently I was drinking. For example, I'd wake up on a Saturday morning, go downstairs, do a shot of tequila. And if I didn't hear any noise, maybe another shot. Go in the backyard, have a smoke, either or. Then go back inside. If she still wasn't awake, maybe another shot. And then pop a beer open. That way if she comes downstairs and she smells alcohol in my breath, I could say, well, I just popped this beer in. And if she dared say, well, it's 8:30 on a Saturday. It's 8:30. Why are you drinking beer? My rationalization, my minimization would be, well, it's Saturday. We're here in San Clemente. It's a beach city. We're going to be going to the beach soon. I'm watching college football. I'm watching college basketball. I'm relaxing. I work hard all week. What's the big deal? One of my favorite, if there was a bracelet, WTBD or whatever, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Not a big deal. Not a big deal is how I always saw things, and it allowed me to lie to myself, for my alcoholism to survive and to thrive, and that's all I wanted. For so long, I wasn't ready to get honest with myself about my life, about my drinking, about my behavior. And as my alcoholism grew over the years, as it increased, my character and integrity decreased. I got into an accident once. I was on my way to go visit. Big surprise, the fiancé thing didn't work out. My drinking and secrets, I ruined that. I chose my wants over my ability to honor the love that we had and that precious gift that we had. And I threw that relationship away. Actually, that's a lie. I did throw it away. I was going to say, I used to say that I lost her. But lost is something like accidental, like I lost my keys. What did I do? I misplaced. I didn't misplace her. I didn't misplace the relationship. I did throw it away. I chose drinking and doing what I wanted over her. I lacked the power to choose otherwise. That was the thing that pushed me the most, to live this type of lifestyle, to satisfy that want, to satisfy that itch. I'm a drink around the clock guy, and I don't care what it is, and I don't care the temperature, and I don't care the taste. I'm a chugger, and that's all that matters to me for so, so long. And one time I was driving to go visit a girlfriend, and I wasn't paying attention, and the truck I was driving went up on the curb, and it hit a cement pole. I was like, whoa. It was very shocking to me. And my truck got back on the road, and it was rolling. It's like, what do I do? What do I do? And I didn't really flee the scene, but I kind of fled because I didn't stay there. But I allowed the truck to roll, and I entered the first parking lot, and I pulled behind a bank, because I had to get some stuff out of the car real fast. Because the cops are coming. And it's like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? My Class B driver's license. If they're gonna give me a DUI test and there's a breathalyzer and there's no way I'm gonna pass. Because I'd been doing shots, I'd got home from work, I was drinking all the way home. Once I got home, I grabbed two beers to go in the shower, which was normal for me. I did a couple shots as I was getting ready to go visit a girlfriend. But I, you know, I'm like a scientist. I'm an alcoholic scientist. If I do these few drinks and these few shots, I won't be fully drunk until the time I get to her house. I won't really be drinking and driving hardcore, just a little buzz, and I can do that fairly well. It'll all time out perfectly. It all fits. And that hitting the pole, when the pole jumped into the middle of the street, or when I jumped into the curb, however you want to see it, it ruined my plan. And I saw the pole fall. The pole eventually fell. It caused more accidents. I saw fire department come. I saw the police. I'm like, oh, this isn't good. Even I could recognize that. And I grabbed my phone, I flipped it open, and I dialed the number, and I called my girlfriend at the time, and I was able to convince her to come drive to the scene, tell the police that she was driving. I was nowhere near. That she left. Yes, oh.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Alcoholism rising, character and integrity decreasing. Self-centeredness ruling my life. Impulses, obsessive thoughts. No ability to think about repercussions, how it might affect other people. In 2008, it all came to a head. I had been a shaky drunk for so long, you know, drinking all the time, shaking. My boss was my boy. I'd known this friend of mine since we were teenagers. And we were tight, man, we were tight. I'd flown to Boston to be in his wedding. I was one of the groomsmen. I'm the godfather to their only daughter. They party and they drink his wife just the way I do, just the way I like to. Party favors and just drinks up the wazoo. And I remember I'm doing stuff so often, like they can't even know about it. I'm not even telling them. And like I'm drinking so often, I'm shaking. I remember one time I had to sign some documents that was on Bob's wife's desk. And I went to sign it, and my arm started doing the shaking bad. I pulled my arm back, nobody noticed. I said, this is bad. And the document I needed to sign was on a clipboard. So I grabbed the clipboard, and I noticed when I brought it up here, I could sign. In other words, little T-Rex arms were much easier to control without shaking than a fully extended arm. So I learned things. I learned a lot of little tricks to hide my drinking, to hide how loaded I was. And if you're not an alcoholic, you don't need a lot of little tricks to hide, to survive, to get by, to not get in trouble. But I had tons of little tricks just so I wouldn't have to change. And it was November, Thanksgiving weekend, 2008, when I woke up in a hotel room in Ontario. And if that's not knowing how I got there, and if that resonates with you, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You certainly earned a seat here. What had happened was, I woke up in this hotel room, not knowing where I was, having to play ceiling detective yet again. All right, what ceiling is this? Where am I? This looks like a hotel room. Okay, starting to come back to me. I have to go to the bathroom. And I walked past the mirror, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I had a big black eye, busted nose, ripped shirt, blood. I had another knot on the side of my head, and it came back to me. What had happened was I was at my friend's house, my boss, my boy since we were teenagers, a friendship over 20 years. One of the guys who's been the most awesome to me and somebody who I could honestly say I truly love. I love this guy. What had happened was the night before, he caught me behaving in a way with his wife that only he should have been behaving. Once again, integrity, character, down. Self-centeredness, sky high. Alcoholism, out of control. And that was my moment of, holy shit, Vic. What's going on in your life? How is this possible? That was my moment of clarity. And it was at that moment I started to think about all the red flags I'd been painting white, all the things I'd been ignoring, all the things I didn't want to admit, my shaking, my patterns, my behavior. I had to admit it, and it allowed me finally to look at my life honestly. The spiritual principle of step one really started with me that night. when I took an honest survey of my life and came to the conclusion that was clear to so many other people that my life sucked. It was out of control and that I needed help. And so I'm fortunate in many, many ways. I too have a charmed life in many regards, like Joe. And one of them being is I have a brother who's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so this happened on a Friday, Saturday. I woke up in that hotel room Saturday morning. I ran into my brother on a Monday night. We were both living in with my dad at that time. And my brother had just gotten home from an H&I business meeting. He was at work, went to a meeting, just wants to come home, eat some food, and go to sleep. And what did he find? His 35-year-old kid brother cornering him in the kitchen, still with the black eye, saying, "Bro, I need to talk to you." And he sized me up. He looked at me, "Bro, what happened to you? Nice weekend?" Because the black eye. And he'd seen me looking bad plenty of times. And there were plenty of times he wanted to rescue me, especially when he first got sober. But he had a sponsor who told him, "Stay out of it, but out of Vic's life. Let Victor go through what he's got to go through. You be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous," is what his sponsor told Fernando, my brother. He said, "You be a good example of AA so that if Victor ever comes to that conclusion he wants help, he'll know where to turn." And damn it, that's exactly, if Steve Weibel didn't call it right, that's exactly what happened. And I asked my brother for help. And he did for me what he had done for lots of other people. Lots of other brothers, sons, sisters, fathers, mothers, cousins, children. He threw me in the car and he took me to a meeting. He took me right back to the Covina 502 Club where he just came from. He was acting on his primary purpose, help another alcoholic in need. And we went to that meeting. It was a four-speaker meeting. And I walked up and I had the shiner and my head was just doing this to me. "Vic, you suck. You're a piece of garbage. You're never going to get this. How is this possible? You're a loser. Repeat." And when I walked up, people did this to me. "Hey, nice to meet you." They shook my hand. They welcomed me. Some people hugged me. They said, "Welcome, Vic." And I sat there in that meeting, and I'm never going to forget that four-speaker meeting. I heard four people share their stories of how out of control their lives were, how much it hurt to be in their skin, that they came to AA, they worked 12 steps, and their lives got better. What I heard were four messages of hope that night. And at the time when I was feeling entirely hopeless, to feel and to experience a little hope was a big deal. And I think that's one of the magic elements of H&I, being able to carry a message into a facility to somebody who's feeling so dark, so lost, so hopeless. And for us as members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come to a facility and share a little hope with somebody at that time, what a priceless gift. And I heard those messages of hope and I wanted that. And you guys told me this: "Vic, you could have what we have if you're willing to do a few certain things. Go to a meeting every day." This is a big one. "Don't get loaded between meetings. Get a sponsor and work these 12 steps like your life depends on it." You guys told me to chase my sobriety the same way I'd been chasing my drinking. And I chased my drinking hard. Mickey's, Lucky's, I mean, I remember when Lucky's came out for a period of time of 60-ouncers. Oh, there were 64, just gigantic, mega 40-ounce. I was like, "Oh, this is a godsend" at the time. And the bottom was always warm, and I did my best to not allow it to get warm, but that was just a lot of beer to drink at one time. But warm or not, and taste good or bad, I would never waste alcohol. Always drink. I didn't need two hands, but it was really big. So I chased my alcoholism, and so I heard what you guys said. All right, I need to really get after this if I want what you guys have. And so I was fired from my job. My brother said, "Hey, bro, go to the 6:15. When I get home at night, we'll go to a meeting." So I said, "All right, I'll go to the 6:15. I went to the 6:15 meeting. My brother got home, and this is what we started to do for the next few days. 6:15, and then a Tuesday step study, a Wednesday book study, a Thursday 11th step meeting, followed by a men's stag step study, the Friday night speaker, the jelly bean, and then some Sunday night speaker. And we were doing this, and I'm learning, and I'm starting to identify, and I'm starting to hear people's stories, and I'm saying, "Ooh, that happened to me. Ooh, I'm like that. This lady shared about being an adulterer." I was like, "Oh, I'm an adulterer. But she looked at ease and comfortable with when she said it. She wasn't proud, but it wasn't kicking her butt the way it was mine. And so that freedom that she had, I wanted that. That was attractive to me. You guys were attractive to me. You ever seen Les walk around? One of the most attractive people I've ever known.
Yeah.
Easy breezy, baby.
Yeah.
Cool. I wanted that. And it was less than 2 weeks into this, and my brother goes, "Hey, bro, jump in the car. Let's go." I said, "Cool, bro. Where are we going tonight?" He said, "We're going on a panel. I'm less than 2 weeks sober." I go, "What's a panel, bro?" He says, "Oh, we're going to go to a place to carry a message of recovery where they can't get out." I go, "Right on, bro. I get to hear your story, finally." He goes, "Oh, no, bro. You're going to talk." "I'm going to talk. I got nothing to say. What am I going to do?" He said, "Bro, relax. We're going to a detox. You got time on it." He took me to ARC, Sunday Night Detox. And that was my first. And I went there. And there's this lady in the back kicking hard. And I was looking at them. And my brother said, "Just tell them what you've been doing." I go to a meeting every day. I'm listening. I'm trying to identify. And I'm not drinking. He said, "Perfect. Give them that. They'll probably relate more to you with your few days than to me with my 16 years. He has 16 more years than me. More, 16 more years than I do. And I hope to God that never changes on both of our accounts. And I left that night, ARC, I left that night feeling something I hadn't felt in a long time. I felt good about myself. I felt good about something I had done. And I didn't think, and that tape that had still been playing for so long of "Vic, you suck," it wasn't playing so loud that night. Mm-hmm. Turns out there's some magic when it comes to being of service to others.
That's right.
Just like AA talks about. And I got to experience that night, and I wanted it. I felt the high of H&I, as they say. We got buttons and everything. And from that point on, I've been, thank God for this, a part of H&I. It's been a part of my recovery, and I think it's no coincidence that I've been able to enjoy these 13 years. This is my first shot at recovery ever. So far, so good. And it has very little to do with me. All I do is try to shut my brain up and get out of the way and just allow the AA and the 12 steps to do what they do so wonderfully for millions and millions of people at this time. And I started to change. You know, my vocabulary started to change. My perception started to change. Like, for example, I began to use the word miracle. Like, a week had gone by, and I hadn't touched a drop or any version of any substance. Crazy. 2 weeks had gone by. A month had gone by. Christmas had gone by. And I had been staying completely sober. That's crazy stuff in my world. But not in this world. And that's what I was learning. The more I began to identify with you guys and be like you, then suddenly the solution that's been working in your life was allowed to start working in mine. When I stop being different and just be like you guys, then these magical 12 steps started to have an effect on me. This willingness to go to meetings, to do this. The more I flexed willingness and open-mindedness, the more that change could start to take place in my life. A closed mind allows me to stay rigid, and no change is going to take place in my life if I'm rigid. And I wanted change. I came in with a gift of desperation, a little G-O-D on my side, and I'm grateful for that. You know, and all these corny phrases in AA that I've hated for so long, they're my tools today. They're the things that help me overcome me. When one of my favorites is, "This too shall pass." Because it helps me with my fear. Because my fear will paint a picture that is absolute. And I've come to realize how arrogant I am with my thinking, how arrogant I am with my fear talk. I buy it as if it's 100% absolute. And it's not. More often than not, it's not. And I came in really close-minded about the spiritual element of this program. I didn't want to hear about it. I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy, all this stuff. I had my own resentments and judgments. Which is all that really I've been experiencing, judgments towards Christianity and Catholicism, for example. And so when I saw the Lord's Prayer, and God is in the steps, we hold hands, we say the Lord's Prayer, I don't want any of this, but I was out of answers. And thank God for that desperation, man, because that desperation brought with it a willingness to do things I didn't want to do because I was out of answers. Hello, little bug. So I got a sponsor shortly. It was on Christmas. It was a Christmas alcathon at the 502 Club. And I did something that day I hadn't done in a long time on my way. Because you guys in AA are very intrusive. Hey, Victor, you got a sponsor? What step are you on? What step are you on? Meetings? You got a commitment? What meetings you got? You got a commitment at that meeting? What step are you on? Who's your sponsor? And so about a month in, roughly, I said a prayer on my way to this alcathon. I said, God, please give me a sign. I guess I need to get a sponsor. That's what willingness looks like. I guess I got to do it. For me at that time. Actually, still, Les, hey, Victor, you want to come speak at this meeting? I guess I got to do it, Les. But it's better. It's still willingness nonetheless. Move, y'all told me this. Victor, move your feet. The head will follow. Take these actions and it'll jive. It'll make sense later. Don't worry about making sense right now and then doing the actions. You're dying of alcoholism. You don't have time for it. Take these actions. Trust us. And that was my journey of faith, was I began to trust you guys and what you were saying and the stories you told me. And some of you alcoholics were much worse than me, which helped a lot because, like, dang, if that guy can get sober, maybe I can too. Have you ever heard Les's story, by the way?
Yeah.
If Les can do it, for example, so can I. Hope, hope, hope. And so, God, please give me a sign for the sponsor. And I went to the alcathon, and I was sitting in the back, and just listening. And this guy I'd kind of been eyeballing for a week or two. His name was Roy, Roy A. He walked in, and he had this brilliant purple and gold Lakers hat. And I'm a sick Lakers fan, so I was like, God, is that, did you tell, is that a nice sign? Like, did you kind of make a duh, Vic?
Duh.
You already think Roy's cool. He's got this brilliant, brand new Lakers.
Yeah, I like it.
And so I went up to Roy after the meeting, and I went through that awkward, Roy, do you think, would you be my sponsor? And because he said yes, the trajectory of my life changed dramatically, slowly over time, but it doesn't have to be radical. Positive change, positive growth is a beautiful thing, and over time, you could have dramatic differences. And so slowly, this journey started slowly for me, but it was powerful, and I could feel it. I could feel change happening. I couldn't describe it. I didn't understand it. It's like this thing, this phone. I really can't describe how it works, but I got complete faith in it. I really can't tell people how it works and operates, but I rely on it and I use it all the time. I trust it. And that's an example of what faith looks like to me. And that spiritual connection, I cannot explain it. Roy told me, I want you to start saying the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. I'm like, damn it, I don't want to start saying prayers. But I followed direction because I was desperate and willing. And I moved my feet. And over a period of time, it stopped being so contrived. It stopped being so, feeling so phony. And it started to feel real. Faith grew in me. I started to change, and I can't identify how, but I could pinpoint and feel that change was happening. Just like we get to hear it all the time in these rooms. This plan, this 12-step program, this gift, divinely inspired gift, works. It works. And I bought into it. There's been too much evidence to not trust this program. It has given me a life that I never knew I wanted, but I always did. It's given me freedom, happiness, tools, opportunity, like I never anticipated, but I have found that I love and crave and yearn for. These spiritual principles allow me to be a better version of myself. Roy took me through the steps. I stayed heavily involved in H&I when I was 6 months sober. That sneaky sponsor of mine told me, hey, let's go on a panel. We're going to Parkside West. I said, okay, cool. The thing was, when that night came up, the Lakers were back in the finals. We had just gotten, let me tell you a story. We had just gotten beat the year before by Boston, humiliating poor Kobe. And now we're back in the finals. And game one was about to start on Sunday. And I'm like, bro, I told my brother, you know, I'm Roy's taking me through the steps. I got commitments at a few meetings. I go all the time. I think I'm pretty dialed in, bro. Could I reschedule with Roy? Would that be okay? Please co-sign my SHIT, bro. And he said, bro, I'm not going to tell you what to do. But I'm going to tell you this. The Lakers never kept you sober. AA will. You need to make a choice. And I think at that time, a precedent was set within me and my prioritization of Alcoholics Anonymous and my prioritization of me and my happiness and my life. I used to be so quick to chase fun and my wants, but I had been learning to see things differently. And if I really want a life worth living, I suffer from alcoholism. I need AA. I need these 12 steps. And I chose to go on that panel, and he gave me that panel, and he hasn't taken it back, nor has he told me I could stop going. So I've been going to it ever since, up until COVID, but looks like things are going to be changing soon. And that really helped send a message to me about willingness, about no matter what, I've got to take my medicine. I have a deadly disease that kills people that was killing me. And I don't say that frivolously. This walking death that I've been living, that alcoholics live before they get to the final death, it's cold and it's cruel and it's sad. And what it does to family members, this friend of ours that you referenced before, it was sad. Sad when I got to that Monday night meeting to see the parking lot filled with paramedics and to see CPR, compressions being done on her, and to watch her parents on the sideline because they go to an Al-Anon meeting to know that they're watching their daughter. This is what alcoholism does. I have awe and respect for alcoholism because of its power, but I have more awe and more respect for these 12 steps because I've watched these 12 steps arrest alcoholism in people's lives. That's amazing. That's amazing, but it works. But it's something I have to do every day. I did my alcoholism every day, and I get to do my recovery every day. Because the life it affords me is wonderful. It's tremendous. In my recovery, I've been able to take men through the steps. I've been able to be a part of conventions, committees, serve as director for our H&I. A committee a few different times, and I got to be of service, and I've been able to watch the light come back in people's eyes, and I've been able to play a part of helping some other people and doing things that are beautiful and bigger than me. I've been able to learn how to live a life not so frickin' self-centered, to be a little bit less, which is winning in my book. That spiritual component that I ran from for so long is now the most important part of my life. It allows me to be a better version of myself. These spiritual principles, honesty, hope, willingness, courage, integrity, perseverance, brotherly love, service, spirituality. These, and when I'm able to live by these principles, my life gets, I get to cause less harm, and I get to enjoy things. I get to be peaceful and happy inside. In sobriety, I was able to go back to school. I went to the University of Laverne and got a bachelor's degree. Right. Turns out, as a sober man, I'm a good student, and I don't need to go to school forever to get a degree, just a normal amount of time. And I use these principles. I show up early. I work hard. I raise my hand. I talk to people. I push past fear because you guys have been showing me how. Lack of power had been my dilemma for so, so long, but being able to find a power greater than myself that allows me to be a better version of myself is something I get to enjoy when I humble myself, when I quiet myself, when I listen. And I've been able to get married in recovery. You know, we fell in love. I proposed to her on Valentine's Day of 2015. We got married in November of that year in a wedding that we weren't financially ready for, but you guys were, and people. And hey, Vic, how about this house? Hey, Vic, we'll make a cake for you. And all these blessings and love and blessings and love. And it was the best day of my life. We went on a hunt until the birth of our daughter. And we went on a honeymoon in New York, and we're on the honeymoon, we went to meetings, because my wife knows the score. The man she loves is the man she loves because of AA. Because of AA. And so I can't afford to lose sight of what's gotten me here, what's allowed me to enjoy this life. It's you guys. It's my higher power, our higher power, whatever you want to call it. Him, her, I don't care. But I pray every day to try to lessen this ego and this pride of mine and this fear that will destroy me. And I get to be a father today to this little 5-year-old girl. And she's my everything. I kiss her at night on her head, her big chubby cheeks, and I rub her back, and we play games, and I get to work all day long and drive in an hour in traffic and come home and not rest for a single moment because she wants to play, because she deserves a father. She deserves a loving and kind father. She deserves something better than that scary home that I was raised in. And she's getting it. And that's a direct result of these 12 steps. And the man I get to be on a daily basis, as long as I take my medicine, as long as I stay plugged in, she'll get that father. She'll get that better version of a me. The man who's able to surrender certain things. When I start to get too angry with her because she's not responding the way she should and she needs to learn, Vic, you're scaring her. Calm down. Maybe some of the lessons I don't need to teach her aren't obey your father versus trust your father. You're safe with your father. Your father loves you. How about those lessons? Because that's what you guys taught me. These lessons of love, these lessons of service, they're greater than me. They're better than me, but they get to be a component of me when I listen to you guys, when I trust you guys, and when I do what you guys do. And I have complete faith that if I continue to do these things, I'll be able to enjoy these blessings for a long, long time. Life isn't problem-free, but I got tools in you guys that I get to lean on when times are tough. As long as I stay willing to do certain things. And me coming here and speaking with you guys, you've allowed me to share my story. And you've helped me a lot more than I helped you. And for that, I owe you all a debt of gratitude. Thank you guys for letting me share.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
It's the microphone, not the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that you were vegan.
Right?
Right?
Thank you. You're done.
Sorry.
You're
done. Job, that's it?
Yeah, invite
Les. Les. Okay, thanks. Love you.
Thank right. you. I know. But...
That's good.
That's funny. Yeah.
You're still. Not a hog. Don't worry about it.
I'm a less alcoholic.
Yes.
Let's give Victor and Joe a hand for a great meeting. And Carlo and Fernando for putting the food on.
Yeah.
Everybody that brought stuff, we appreciate it. If you want to get involved and you want to bring something, just talk to Fernando and just bring it, you know. I'm your grapevine rep, and tomorrow is the chili cook-off. I want to tell you that in 1975, if it wasn't for H&I, I don't think I'd be here. H&I came in, and I'll never forget, and they had a smile on their face and a glow around their head, and I was chopping their head off. But things change, just like you said. You know, we could do this deal together. If you're new, just stick around. Keep showing up. We're here every day. We have a meeting at 9 o'clock and at noon, and we're here every Friday night. If you want to get involved, be of service. That's how I get out of myself, be of service to others, because that way I don't have to think so much about myself, you know? So anyway, here's the grapevine. I have two grapevines. What we do is I'll give one away. You guys could read it, bring it back so I could give it back out again. But I have one here from 1973, '01. Once over lightly. Self-forgiveness. That's a good one. Anybody want to come up and get this? Come on up here. All right, Mike. Way to go.
Yeah, so I just became the secretary of the grapevine meeting on Thursday in San Dimas. So if you guys want to come help me read this.
Okay. All right. What time on Thursday?
Oh. Okay, here's another one. Here's a grapevine. It's this month's edition. It's funny how everything works is in the right time. A Night at the Yard. It's a prison edition, you know. And I read a story in here. It reminded me of me when I was sleeping on the runway in the old county. They used to come by with a cart, right? And you'd reach through and grab one. And this guy was locked down in prison, and the cart came by, and he went like this, and here it was, the grapevine, meeting in a print. You know, this will save your life. You mean, you get stuck on stupid anytime, anywhere, you know. And open this up and read it, and you realize that, hey, I'm not the only one, everything's okay. You know, this will save your life. Sometimes you don't have a meeting. So you could get 2 years for $58, and you could even, you know, send us a subscription to the police department or the fire department or a hospital or send one to prison, you know. It's a good thing to have. So anyway, a night at the yard. Who wants to come up and get it? Come on.
I was about to say that was pretty fitting for you.
Come on, Tina.
They won't let me back in the prison on account of COVID. I've been going 18 years. I need a message.
There's other ways to get to prison.
I need a message.
There's other ways to get to prison.
I need a message from the yard.
Okay, Timothy, come on up here and read the promises and pray us out of here.
All right.
We need help after the meeting. Help Fernando putting the stuff in the truck. We'd appreciate it. And thanks for letting me share. And put that on here.
All right. Thank you.
My name's Tim. I'm an addict and an alcoholic and teen and all sorts of crazy stuff. These are the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We'll lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? I don't think so. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize if we work for them. Now, after a moment of silence for the alcoholic who still suffers and the family who still suffers in and out of these rooms, please join me in the Lord's Prayer. Who's Lord?
Our Father, Lord in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen.
Keep coming back. Are you taking this stuff or not? Or we take it?
I can take it.
I'm going to be there at 7 in the morning, so it's probably good that we start.
All right, Robert. There you go.
Hi, my name is Calvin. I'm an alcoholic. What it was like. I shared for 10 to 15 minutes, or
usually 10 to 15, or whatever's on your, you know, on your heart. Yeah.
Okay. So what it was like. I grew up in a family that were full of alcoholics, and they had no thinking. There was no structure. So that's pretty much how my life turned out. No structure. And when I got to high school is when a lot of this drinking started. When I would compete with friends, I would try to compete with other people, you know. My life just had no direction. It wasn't until I actually got in a relationship and had a child is where I started to notice that I was an alcoholic. I would find myself coming home drunk. I would always be yelling at my ex-fiance. There was never a time that I believe I was sober coming home. And that just turned into more problems that caused my son to be taken out of my life and my fiance to be taken out of my life as well. For the 3 years of, for 3 years of living with my grandmother, I would just continue to drink, and I didn't have no cares in the world. I just wanted to do everything my way. It wasn't until I actually moved with my mother in Lancaster, and I got my first DUI. It was actually my sister. Actually, I was living with my sister, and I drove up to Six Flags, and I got my first DUI. And the funny part is, I was actually going up there to look for a job. And someone told me, you know, I have to drink, or I'm going to drink this 40 before I go up there, which was the way I used to think. And today, you know, when I got my first DUI is when I, you know, started to notice, you know, I need to get away from this place because I knew so many people in the place where I lived. And it was just like, I can go up to the liquor store and, you know, ask the guy, hey, like, I'll give you money back if I can get this drink, you know, right now. I would go to the liquor store every morning. Like, there was one day I believe that I downed a bottle of gin. I threw it up and I shit myself. And I went right back in the store to get alcohol and then drove home. And then So it was getting pretty bad to that point. So when I moved to Chino, that's when I actually started my sobriety. When I first got out here, my sponsor was a house manager. And I was just so disrespectful that my house manager actually fired me. And I don't know why, but, you know, I was just like I wanted to like show him, I'll show you, what it's like. I went and found another sponsor I still have today. And I'm starting to see that I'm selfish. I'm self-seeking. I do things the way I want to do things. I have a hard time following direction. I don't like when people tell me to do stuff. And all these things, you know, as I'm working in this program, you know, and you take me through the steps, I'm starting to see. Because my sobriety birth date is July 7th, 2020. So I am coming up on 2 years. And happy birthday to the person I believe we took 17 years, 37 years, and 1 year, I believe. Yeah. Happy birthday to you guys because that is a blessing. And I was told, you know, when blessings go up or when praise goes up, blessings come down. And today, you know, I don't really speak to my higher power much. I'm still trying to get into more of, you know, how to stay connected to my higher power. But I know my higher power is very important. And I have chose to call my higher power God, but I still haven't chose to hit my knees. It's just a work in progress. And the more I notice I continue to work on these things in this program every single day, like step 1, 2, and 3, to find out what step I'm in, I can actually work with myself with a clear mind. And it's starting to get better. I'm not actually just thinking for myself anymore. I have, like most people said, I believe it was, what was her name? Nancy and Jim. I also have friends in this program too, you know, that I can rely on if I need to call and, you know, ask for advice myself or suggestions. Actually, I would say suggestions because, like, sometimes I don't always take everybody's suggestion. And most of the time it's if I can't get a hold of my sponsor because, you know, my sponsor... Favorite line for me is to say, God willing, and the creek don't rise. And I'm like, but you make it sound like you're going to die. Like, but he says it to me because, you know, I'm supposed to be out there collecting numbers. I'm supposed to be out there fellowshipping. Or I can be in Zoom fellowshipping. All these things, you know, collectively help me with my program today. And that I'm very grateful for because I had to find things for myself to be grateful for. Like the place where I live, the sobriety time I have, the sponsor I have, the friends I have, the family I have, my child, my higher power, all these things collectively help me where I'm at today. And I would like to say, if you be newer than me, find yourself a sponsor, or get yourself a sponsor who has a sponsor. Work the steps and keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.